We've heard in the beginning of this chapter 27, texts 1 through 9, about the pure soul in the first text, about the pure soul who is aloof from the material energy, just as the sun is aloof from the reflection, from its own reflection upon the water. It is unaffected by the qualities of the water. So similarly, the qualities of the pure soul are not at all affected, or his nature, his consciousness, who he is, his conception, how he acts, is not all affected by the material energy. This is described also in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He sees the material energy working, but he does not at all identify himself with the workings of the material world or the elements of the material world. This is truly extraordinary. It is not of this world, it is out of this world. He is out of this world. One can be on that platform and be a jnani, but one can be on that platform and be a pure devotee as well. Because the jnani will realize himself as a soul, as aham brahmasmi, tat tamasi. But a devotee will realize himself as an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So after describing that type of a personality, who has, as described in the text 72, who has, through the processes of bhakti and detachment and jnana, knowledge, as the knowledge was described in the 26th chapter, such a soul can be aloof. And then we read yesterday in the succeeding texts how one not aloof from the material world, but one who is entangled in the material world, how he acts and how he thinks, and additionally, how he can get out. How does he act? The prime characteristic of his action is that he's in the illusion of identification with the body, and he considers all those things produced of the material world as meant for his enjoyment. He sees the material world as if that he was the lord of the material world. And of course, he can never, a tiny living entity, can never be the lord of the material world. He cannot be. It is impossible, because the material energy is working. It is powerful, much more powerful than he is. And the material energy is working to frustrate him continuously. He is trying to, as the expression we use, lord it over the material world. And the material energy is just entangling him in the complexities of this powerful machinery that we have heard creation described in the last chapter. But then, if he's very fortunate, he practices, as we heard yesterday, the yam niyam, the different methodologies of extricating himself, of removing himself from the material world. And all these things are accomplished by the sadhana, or the practices of bhakti yoga. The essence, the heart of this Sankhya yoga that Kapila Dev is explaining to his mother Devahuti is not the jnana, not the Astanga Yoga that we will hear in the next chapter, but it is the bhakti. It is the katha, hearing the katha, the topics about Krishna. Mat katha shravanena cha. This is really the essence, because in Krishna Katha, Krishna himself is present. But Srila Sukadeva Goswami is presenting this, and all these topics about Kapila Muni, which are mixed with other methodologies other than bhakti, because there's so many other persons present when he is speaking to Maharaj Prikit. Some of them may be jnanis, some of them may be yogis. And he wants to show, Sukadeva Goswami wants to show all those personalities, even though Maharaj Prikit is the main here. He wants to show them that the essence of everything is bhakti. And without bhakti, nothing, no other process will actually be successful. Bhakti is the heart of all processes. But if one comes to bhakti practicing other processes, he won't get the highest result. But yet, if one practices this methodology, and he is going to lead through his teachings of Sankhya Yoga, he's going to lead to a very, very high point, full meditation upon and full service upon the Paramatma, who is ultimately a part of who? The Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not even a part of Krishna, but an expansion of 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 Krishna. And this is who the yogis are meditating upon. But Krishna Stu Bhagavan Sayam, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the most superior. But yet all these very technical and complicated methodologies, all the jnana, is explained in the last chapter, in 26, and in this chapter, 27, to ensure that we understand actually that all these processes lead to bhakti, and the highest understanding or the highest realization that bhakti can award is of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if we don't have any awareness of jnana or of yoga, then we may become confused and think, as some jnanis and some yogis do. The jnanis think that, oh, bhakti is just for a particular type of person who has a particular sentiment, but he can't perform jnana yoga, or he can't perform astanga yoga. So let him do bhakti, it's good for him. It's all right, he'll benefit something. But no, bhakti is actually the highest. And only by bhakti can Bhagawan be realized. And again, the highest feature of the Bhagawan aspect of the Absolute Truth is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Sayam. This is what the Bhagavatam is teaching. But yet we have to go through, we have to hear. But from the point of view of understanding Krishna, we hear all these other teachings that are very wonderful, but they will lead us only to the process of bhakti. And through Prabhupada's purports, we will get good instructions on how to prosecute our bhakti very carefully. Not only will we hear about other paths and understand how they lead to bhakti and how bhakti is the essence of other paths, we will also, very much through Prabhupada's purports, learn how those other paths are accomplished in bhakti. The essence of those paths are accomplished in bhakti, and we will hear how to accomplish the aspects of those paths through very strictly and seriously, tivrena, seriously practicing bhakti. But it has to be very serious. One time, I was in the Philippines with Srila Prabhupada, and there were other devotees there, of course, but there was only a few, there were many people just coming to Krishna consciousness in the Philippines. But mostly there was just one, two, three or four devotees who had met Prabhupada before. And Prabhupada was staying in the Manila Intercontinental Hilton or something like that. He's staying in a hotel, a nice hotel suite. And Prabhupada asked that his milk be heated up. So he told his servant, who was a new servant, to go get this heated up. So he went to the hotel kitchen and said, "Heat up this, or I'll heat up this milk." And they said, "No, you can't do it." So he came back to Prabhupada and said, that they told me I can't heat it up, Prabhupada. After all, it was a big, big, fancy hotel, and it didn't have private cooking facilities for anyone. So he told Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, "You are not serious." And then there was one very strong, heavy type of sannyasi there. And he said, and he took the milk pot and he went to the kitchen, and 5 minutes later he came back with the milk heated. And he said, "Sometimes you have to yell." That's what he said. In other words, the devotee was very serious about getting his service accomplished. And he was ready to do what was required to get his service accomplished. He was very serious in his devotional service. So sometimes we have to do things in our devotional service that either others will criticize us for, or we have to do things in our devotional service that we may not like so much to do. But that tivra, serious means serious about taking to the path of bhakti, making devotional offerings to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in that case, it was through the representative of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada. So by doing that, by being very serious, following very seriously the path of bhakti, then the result we will hear today. But it will be, we will hear the result, and the result is to be stated in the position that we heard in the first verse in this chapter, where the soul is liberated. He's aloof from his body completely, even though within a body. He does not identify with his body. One time, Prabhupada used to translate his books very, very late at night or early in the morning, depending upon how you look at it. He would wake up at around 12 midnight and he would translate. So while he was translating, he once called one of his sannyasi DBC members. And he was listening, had that devotee sit with him while he was translating. And Prabhupada said to him that, "You can come and sit here every night with me if you like." And that devotee said, "Prabhupada, I'm already sleeping five and a half hours a night. I can't do it." And Prabhupada said, "But I am doing it." And the devotee said to Prabhupada, "Yes, but you're a Paramhamsa, a great exalted soul." And Prabhupada said, "But why you are not Paramhamsa?" When Prabhupada wanted to make a point, if he tried to make excuses, very strong. "Why you are not Paramhamsa? And what's the answer to that? You have to answer for yourself why you are not Paramhamsa." And the answer is, generally, because not so serious. And why? Because material attachments. On one side, attached to material things, and on the other side, not so serious about pleasing Krishna. I'd like to be peaceful, I like this, I like that, but not so serious about pleasing Krishna, not so serious, really. Or not, we can't even say not so serious, but not completely serious. Because that's what it takes, sava bhavena bharata. It takes complete dedication, complete bhakti, complete giving oneself to Krishna and his process, being a full devotee. Complete taking shelter of Krishna, complete taking shelter of his holy names. So sometimes we should examine what it is on this side that we're so attached to. It's like there was once one devotee Mataji who was very ill, and she stayed in Vrindavan. She was a Mataji who distributed books for many, many, many years. And Jagatwini Mataji was taking care of her, helping taking care of her a bit. So, and just about 3 days before she had cancer or something, and she was dying. And about 3 days before she actually died, because you can't eat, you know, you're this problem, this pain, that problem. About 3 days before she died, she heard this Mataji named Gauri Dasi. She heard her say, no. She was just lying in bed, and then suddenly she said, no, it's not worth it. Something was going through her mind, so she said, no, it's not worth it. So Jagatwini Mataji asked her, what were you thinking of that you said, no, it is not worth it? And she said, well, I was serving before in Los Angeles. And across the street from the temple is a restaurant. And in the devotee restaurant, devotee Govinda's restaurant, in this restaurant, they serve something that you don't get in India called nachos, which are corn chips, and where they mix it, where they put avocado spread on it. And I was so hungry, and I was just thinking of these nachos, and I was thinking that I'd really like to eat some of those now. But then I thought, if I want to eat some of those now, I'm going to have to take another birth to do so. And then I thought, no, it's not worth it. And that's what came out of my mouth. So we should see what we're attached to. On one side, what we're attached to in the material world, and see if it's actually worth it to take a next birth or a next birth. And what we'll find out is the mind will say, yes, it is worth it. And then you have to preach to the mind. The mind will say so many things. Say yes, because unless you satisfy that desire, how will you make advancement? Unless you have this, how will you do this? Unless you have that, how will you serve? But actually, there is only one thing lacking in us. And that is, of course, deep, deep greed. Tatra loyam api mulam ekalam. The positive attraction. So we should get that. So Kapila Muni is now going to explain what one who is detached from the material world, what is his experience like that of the first verse? So text 10. One should be situated in the transcendental position, because the frame of reference, remember what we've just heard, the 26th chapter. And in the 26th chapter, the whole creation was explained and how the souls are injected into the material energy. The pradhan turns into mahatattva, then the mahatattva begins transforming, and then the first thing is produced is the chitta, and then the false ego and combining of ignorance, and the whole material world is transformed. But the soul becomes bewildered, and later on in the chapter, when the universal form comes, the souls enter, and then they have the whole ingredients are there, everything for the whole, their bodies and all the ingredients, the senses, that, and the predominating deities who control everything. Everything is there, and their bodies are constructed like cars on an assembly line. The bodies are constructed according to the karma of the individuals and their desires, and they get different things. But he himself, the soul, only because of that desire to enjoy the material world, is given that material body. So therefore, text 10 begins to describe the vritta buddhya vastano dhuri bhutanya darshana upalabhyat manatmanam chakshu shevarkam atmadrik. That means he sees his atmanam from the last verse. He realized upalabhya. He have realized by his pure intellect. This is more from the jnani side. By his pure intellect, he has realized, because the last chapter was explaining this jnana. By his pure intellect, he has realized atmanam, his own self, as different from all these material parts. He has realized this through the process of this jnana, mixed with detachment and bhakti. He has realized this. And he sees it as clearly as chakshusha, with his eyes. He sees it as clearly as arkam, eva arkam atmadrik. As you can see the sun in the sky. He sees himself as separate from the material body. Prabhupada's translation. One should be situated in the transcendental position, beyond the stages of material consciousness, and should be aloof from other conceptions of life, those other concepts that we have relating to the body and the mind. I am the Sava Upadi Vinaya Muktam. This is me. I am a scholar, I am a teacher, I am this, I am that, I'm American, I'm 57. Aloof from all those false concepts of life. They are temporary, they're changing, they are not me. Aloof from all of them. He sees himself. He realizes freedom from false ego. One should see his own self just as one sees the sun in the sky. Prabhupada's purport towards the end describes this word. He comments on this word. Chakshu eva arkam. As we can see the sun without a doubt, one who is fully developed in Krishna consciousness sees Krishna and his energy. By this vision, one becomes atmadrik, or self-realized. When the false ego, or identifying the body with the self, is removed, actual vision of life is perceivable. The senses, therefore, also become purified, because one doesn't engage the senses simply in sense enjoyment. So that's the sign of purified senses. Real service of the Lord begins when the senses are purified. One doesn't have to stop the activities of the senses, but the false ego of identifying with the body has to be removed. Then the senses automatically become purified, and with purified senses, one can actually discharge devotional service. Purified senses means Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Serving the Lord of the senses with the senses, not serving the false ego. 11. A liberated soul, this is how he sees. He sees himself illuminating the body just like the sun illuminates the entire earth. A liberated soul realizes the absolute personality of Godhead, who is transcendental, and who is manifest as a reflection even in the false ego. He is manifest as a reflection even in the false ego, because where does the false ego come from? We heard this in the previous chapter. It is manifest from the Mahatattva. And where does the Mahatattva come from? It comes from the Pradhan. And whose energy gives power, electrifies the Pradhan, and causes it to manifest all the varieties? This is who? This is Karana Dakshai Vishnu. So when he sees the false ego, his own false ego, he sees the potency of the Lord in that. So he doesn't identify with it, but he sees this is just a reflection of the Supreme Lord. Indeed, he sees everything as a reflection of the Supreme Lord, or as a reflection of a reflection of the Supreme Lord, as we'll read in the next verse. Even in the tendency to identify with the body, he sees that as coming from the Supreme Lord, and himself is different. So we also heard about this in the last chapter with pure consciousness, this Vasudeva consciousness, how one sees himself and he sees the reflection of the Lord. So here how is an explanation of how he's seeing himself and he's seeing a reflection of the Lord, because everywhere and everything, Vasudeva Savamiti Samahamasadolava, such a great soul is very rare, because people have attachments and because people aren't serious about spiritual life. So such a great soul is very rare. So he sees the Lord, he sees himself, he sees the material world, even the false ego as a reflection. He is the support, that Lord is the support of the material cause. That which is temporary is the material cause, asat, asati in the false ego, that which is asat or temporary. He sees Krishna even in that, because he realizes that the Lord is supporting everything. The Lord is the support of the material cause, and he enters into everything. This is Vasudeva, who is the object of the vision of the purified soul, one who has pure chitta, pure consciousness. He, the Lord, is absolute, one without a second. There, one without a second means that there's only him in existence. Even the living entities are none different from him, even though we are individuals. We are also his energy. This is the meaning of the absolute truth. So he sees the absolute truth. And he, the Lord, is the eyes of the illusory energy. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Means that no one can see even in the illusory energy without him. His consciousness is illuminating everything. Purport. And also, without the sun, which is considered his eye, we cannot literally see anything without light. Purport. A pure devotee can see the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything materially manifested. Everything. He doesn't see anything as different from his Lord. But it takes love to see this. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena, or there's one verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Stavaram Jagamam Deki, in the moving and the non-moving things, the pure devotee, Deki, he sees. Stavaram Jagamam Deki Na Deki Tare Murti. He doesn't see just the forms of those things. What does he see? Spurti Ishtadeva Spurti. He sees everything as a manifestation of his Supreme Lord. But it is not just through the intellect. A devotee sees it through his devotion. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santasadaiva hridayeshu valokanti. Yam shayama sundaram achintya. He sees everything, he sees the Supreme Lord everywhere. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he saw in Jagannath Puri a big Chatak Parvat, he saw a big sand dune. And what did he see it as? Govardhan. And he went running towards it out of deep separation from Vrindavan. When he saw Lord Jagannath, he saw Shyamasundar. Because that was his mood. Everywhere, only seeing Krishna and Krishna's mercy. And indeed, Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita in one of his purports that a devotee lives only in Krishna's mercy. And therefore he is living in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, no anxiety wherever he is, because he is internally in the spiritual world. Externally, but he has that consciousness. Do we want that consciousness? Ask yourself, because here is the process. But it needs bhakti performed, yes? Viraktya and jnana too. This is the knowledge. But it has to be done very seriously, completely, fully. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita that the background of the material manifestation is Lord Krishna. And as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Krishna is the cause of all causes. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that the Supreme Lord, by his partial or plenary expansion, is present not only within this universe and each and every universe, but in every atom, although he is one without a second, means there's only one Lord, and yet he's everywhere. The word adhyam, without a second, which is used in this verse, indicates that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is represented in everything, including the atoms, he is not divided. There's only one absolute truth. His presence in everything is explained in the next verse, or how one perceives his presence in everything is explained in the next verse. Yata jalasta abhasa stalastenanvadrisyate svabhasena tato surya jalastena devistita. The presence of the Supreme Lord can be realized just as the sun is realized, first as a reflection on water, and again as a second reflection on the wall of a room, although the sun itself is situated in the sky. Here is the meaning of this text. Prabhupada's purport says, the example given herewith is perfect. The sun is situated in the sky. Visualize this. The sun is in the sky, far, far away from the surface of the earth. So Krishna is there. But in one sense, he's far away in Goloka Vrindavan. But the sun, its reflection, the sun's reflection can be seen in a pot of water in the corner of the room. So the sun, even though far away, there's a pot of water in one corner of the room, and the sun's reflection is in that. And the room is dark. And the sun's reflection in the pot of water gives illumination in the room. And then you walk in the room. And can you see anything? Can you see anything if you walk in the room? Yes, why? Where is the light coming from? Huh? Where is the light coming from? The sun. But you're not getting the sunlight directly. You're getting the sunlight by its reflection on the wall, not even from the water pot. But just by walking in and seeing the sun's reflection on the wall, you can trace it back. Where is this light coming from? You're seeing the wall, you're seeing everything, you can see yourself. Where is this light coming from? So you trace it back one step if you're to the reflection in the water pot, and then from that you can trace it back all the way to the sun itself. So if one's consciousness is pure, when one sees anything, one's consciousness, when it illumines and perceives anything, is aware of anything, one can understand that all in existence is ultimately resting upon the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada's purport continues, the room is dark and the sun is far away in the sky, but the sun's reflection on the water illuminates the darkness of the room. A pure devotee can realize the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything by the reflection of his energy, because there's nothing in existence. And this is, but him in the form of his energy, Mama Angsa Teja Sambhava, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10. And we just heard this explained in the last chapter, how everything is a manifestation of the Lord's energy, pushed on by his energy in the form of Kala, maintained by him in the form of the Super Soul. And the Mahatattva too is his energy. So there's nothing separate from him. If one traces what we see far back enough, we will see that Krishna is Sarvakarana Karanam, the cause of all causes. So one, a pure devotee, if he has pure consciousness, he can realize the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything by the reflection of his energy. And this is what was explained in that difficult text where the devotee realizes, or Vasudeva Savamiti in text 21 perhaps in the previous chapter, when one pure devotee means one's consciousness is pure, the chitta, the consciousness is pure, his awareness is pure, that means it is accurate, without the contaminations of ignorance, which make us perceive things falsely. Just like if we have different colored lenses over our eyes, if I have a pink lens or a blue lens or a black lens, I'll see that the room is blue, but actually it is not blue. The walls are yellow. But I'm seeing it that way due to the lens covering my eyes. But pure eyesight means all the lenses, all the covering, all the ignorance is removed. And what does one with pure consciousness, because the consciousness gives the coverings, what does one perceive who has pure consciousness? He perceives that there is nothing in existence other than Krishna. And if he's a devotee, he perceives the person, the Supreme Personality of God. And that's what Kapila Dev is teaching. Not just jnana, so we perceive only the oneness of everything, and not just yoga, where we will perceive the person, the forearm Paramatma who is pervading all existence, but also with bhakti one will perceive the Supreme Lord. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. In the Vishnu Purana is stated that as the presence of fire is understood by heat and light, so the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although one without a second, is perceived everywhere by the diffusion of his different energies. Nothing can exist without him. It is confirmed in Isha Upanishad that the presence of the Lord is perceived everywhere by the liberated soul. So that would be very wonderful to perceive Krishna everywhere. How would we be lonely ever if we perceived Krishna everywhere? Just as the sunshine and the reflection can be perceived everywhere, although the sun is situated far away from the surface of the globe. Text 13. More about the realization of the self-realized soul. The self-realized soul is thus reflected first in the threefold ego. The threefold ego is passion, goodness, and ignorance that were mentioned that in the cause of the creation of the rest of the world. And then, because everything else comes from that, the body, the senses, and the mind. So first he understands, just as one, because his chitta's consciousness is pure, because he has Vasudev consciousness, he perceives that everything is just a reflection. And his consciousness is being reflected through all these different things, but he himself is different, the soul. We'll read from the second paragraph. We'll read the second paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. By the understanding of the pure soul called Satyadrik, self-realized, one can see everything as a reflection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A concrete example can be given in this connection. A conditioned soul sees a very beautiful rose. Raise your hand if in the last day you've seen a very beautiful rose. Yes, you've seen one, Nisringadevi? Where did you see one? Yes? I saw one when I offered it to my Giriraj this morning. Very nice red, very deep red rose. So, when a conditioned soul sees a very beautiful rose, he thinks the nice aromatic flower should be used for his own sense gratification. Oh, a rose, I shall enjoy this. This is one kind of vision. A liberated soul, however, sees the same flower as a reflection of the Supreme Lord. He thinks this is what it means as a reflection of the Supreme Lord. When he looks in it, when he looks at this rose, what does he see? Not only the rose, but he sees not that Krishna has thorns and is red colored and has petals. No, so he doesn't see it in that sense as a reflection of the Lord, but he sees it. He sees the same flower as a reflection of the Supreme Lord, and this is how he sees it. This beautiful flower is made possible by the superior energy of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, it belongs to the Supreme Lord and it should be utilized in His service. So it is His energy. It is a reflection of His spiritual energy, because the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. These are two kinds of vision. The conditioned soul sees the flower for his own enjoyment, and the devotee sees the flower as an object to be used in the service of the Lord. In the same way, one can see the reflection of the Supreme Lord in one's senses, body, and mind, in everything, that everything is resting upon Him. Everything is being supported by Him. Everything is His energy. And we just, again, heard in the previous chapter how everything was indeed coming from Him, and therefore everything, it is His. And things that are mine should be used in my service, and things, because the things should be used in the service of He who possesses those things. So who, the owner, so who actually owns? He not only owns it, it is resting upon Him. It is His energy, He is the creator, and eventually He will destroy it. It should be used in His service. So our body, our mind, our intelligence, our ego, everything. Ego in the sense means the sense of I-ness, that I exist as a person, the sense of self. Everything should be used in Krishna's service. This is how a devotee thinks. So he sees Krishna reflected in that. In the same way, when we see shoes outside, there are so many pairs of shoes outside. We see the person whose shoes these belong to, if we know who they belong to. We see that person in his shoes, reflected in it, as if reflected in it. Or if I have a child and I see my beloved child's shoes, I immediately see the person, my beloved child who I love so much. So similarly, when a pure devotee in that consciousness sees anything in this world, he sees the Lord reflected in that. With that correct vision, one can engage everything in the service of the Lord. It is stated in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu that one who has engaged everything, his vital energy, his wealth, his intelligence, and his words in the service of the Lord, or who desires to engage all these in the service of the Lord, no matter how he is situated, is to be considered a liberated soul. Or satyadrik. Such a man has understood things as they are. So what is the... we just heard the devotee's relationship with his body on the subtle and gross level, and more about how he relates with his body, how he perceives his own body, this exalted consciousness. 14. Although a devotee appears to be merged in the five material elements, the objects of material enjoyment, the material senses and material mind and intelligence, all these are the creations of the material world that we just heard about in chapter 26. He is understood to be awake and freed from the false ego. Because he is freed from the false ego, and doesn't identify himself as the enjoyer of the material world, but identifies himself as Krishna's servant, purely, fully, he is separated from his body. Prabhupada's purport. The explanation by Rupa Goswami in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu of how a person can be liberated even in this body. What is the verse? Say it. Jivan mukta suchyate. So even in the body one can be liberated. Jivan mukta. The living entity who has become satyadrik, self-realized, who realizes his position in relation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you can see how impersonalists or mayavadis, they're self-realized in one sense, but they don't realize, what they don't realize is how everything comes from Krishna. So they don't realize their relationship with the Supreme Lord. So it's very partial, incomplete. So they're not fully self-realized, they're partially self-realized. They may remain apparently merged in the five elements of matter, the five material sense objects, the 10 senses and the mind and intelligence, that which we just heard about is created, but still he's considered to be awake and to be freed from the reactions of false ego. Here the word lina is very significant. The Mayavadi philosophers recommend merging in the impersonal effulgence of Brahman. That is their ultimate goal or destination. That merging is also mentioned here. But in spite of merging, one can keep his individuality. The example given by Jiva Goswami is that a green bird that enters a green tree appears to merge in the color of greenness, but actually the bird does not lose its individuality. That's one of the opulences of Vrindavan. You can see green birds, and they fly into green trees. And then you can't see them anymore. But does that mean, is there a parrot out there just demonstrating the philosophy? Is he in a green tree? You can't see him, so you don't know. But you can hear him. He appears to merge in the greenness of the tree, but actually the bird does not lose his individuality. We can hear him squawking. Similarly, a living entity merged either in the material nature or the spiritual nature does not give up his individuality. When the souls are injected within the pradhan and the mahatattva by the glance of the Lord, even though they appear to lose themselves in the material energy, they still exist as individuals. And even if they appear to merge in with Brahman, they still appear as individuals. They don't appear as individuals, but they don't lose their individuality. But real individuality is to understand oneself to be the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. This information is received from the mouth of Lord Chaitanya. He clearly said upon the inquiry of Sanatana Goswami,
When he said, Kayami, who am I? A living entity, Mahaprabhu replied, is a servitor of Krishna eternally. And what is the Bengali? Krishner, of Krishna, Nityadas, eternal servant of Krishna. Krishna also confirms in Bhagavad Gita, the living entity is eternally part and parcel. Where in Bhagavad Gita? Mama eva angso jiva loke. The mama, my, eva, certainly, angsa, the jivas in this world, my parts and parcel, certainly. And the part and parcel is meant to serve the whole. This is his individuality. We'll go to the next verse. How else does he perceive? The living entity can vividly feel his existence as the seer. What does seer mean? What does seer mean? When you talk jnani type of talk, this word comes out a lot. Yeah, the one who sees and perceives. So the living entity can vividly feel his existence as the seer. So we may perceive that I am seeing the world. I am the one. I am not the yellow wall. Do you see a yellow wall? Are you the yellow wall? Are you the one, or are you the one who's seeing the yellow wall? Yes, you too. Yes, you too. We're all just seeing the yellow wall. We are no one thinks that I am. There's a difference between the object that is seen and the person who is seeing, the seer, the one who is doing the seeing. So the living entity can vividly feel his existence as the seer, the one who is seeing. But because of the disappearance of the ego during this state of deep sleep, he takes himself to be lost. So when one goes to sleep, and there are three different states of consciousness. One is awake, where the difference between the seer and the seen is clear, if one takes the trouble to think about it. But then when one goes to sleep, there are two different states of sleep. One is called the dreaming state, and the other is deep sleep. So in a dreaming state, one loses his consciousness of being this seer who sees the yellow wall or the green tree, but he accepts a different state when he's dreaming, where he sees other things. He sees himself running away or doing this or that, or he sees himself buying this or losing this. He ends up with a different state of seeing. But then, when he's in deep sleep, when the living entity is in deep sleep, deeper than dreaming, then he has no sense of seeing anything. Yes, we all have this experience. You wake up in the morning and you remember some dream, when you're deeply, deeply asleep, called susupti. There is no consciousness of oneself at all. One has lost oneself. Is that good or bad? Huh? That is compared to merging. That is compared to the impersonalists say that is what Brahman realization is like, that basically. There's no sense of the self. And it's good if you're suffering so much in your day and you're so tired and you just can't do, you just want to go to sleep and forget everything for a while. Forget you exist. That's impersonal realization, basically. He falsely takes himself to be lost. Like a man who has lost his fortune and feels distressed, he thinks himself to be lost. Everything is lost. Oh, I have no reason to exist anymore. I lost my wealth. And people kill themselves when they lose all their money. thinking that he is lost, but actually he is not lost. And nor when he forgets himself completely is he lost in a deep sleep. The proof that one actually hasn't lost himself in deep sleep is what? What's the proof? Because when you fall asleep and you lose your, there's a sense of loss of identity, if it's deep sleep. But what's the proof that you actually never lost your identity? You come back, yes. You come back and you say, boy, I had a great sleep. It was so nice to forget about everything for a while. I forgot. So the conclusion is that you were the one who temporarily lost the sense of feeling of self. So similarly, even when the soul is merged in Brahman, appears to be merged in Brahman, he actually hasn't lost his identity. He thinks he has lost, that he has no awareness of it, rather, at that particular time. Just like when I'm in the experience of deep sleep, I have no awareness of my individuality. But then when I wake up, I remember, oh, it was such a nice sleep. I wish I could do that every night instead of all the trouble my mind is giving me when I'm dreaming. So Prabhupada's purport, we're reading a little bit the way down. A person who has lost a great sum of money may think that he is lost, but actually he is not lost. Only his money is lost. But due to his absorption in the money or identification with the money, he thinks he is lost. Similarly, when we falsely identify with matter as our field of activities, we think that we are lost, although actually we are not. As soon as a person is awakened to the pure knowledge or of understanding that he's an eternal servant of the Lord, his own real position is revived. In a dream, we think, oh, I've lost my money, and we feel I've lost everything. But actually, I have a different identity awake that has nothing to do with the person lying on the bed and imagining so many things. So similarly, here we are in the material world identifying with so many things, just dreaming so many things. Just dreaming, bewildered, bewitched, entranced, enchanted by the illusory energy whose name is Maya. Just everyone, relax and imagine that you're a king. Imagine that you're unhappy. Just dream and take it easy. Everything is... Maya casts a spell on us. And we fall right in her grip and she... You are this body. You feel yourself getting a little... You may be surprised that your eyelids are feeling more and more heavy at every second. You fall under the spell of Maya in this way. But the living entity is not lost. When he forgets his identity completely in deep sleep, he becomes absorbed in dreams and he may think himself a different person or may think himself lost. But actually his identity is intact, having nothing to do with the sleep or the dream. The concept of being lost is due to false ego. He loses his current false ego and picks up another false ego. And he continues as long as one is not awake to the sense of his existence as an eternal servitor of the Lord. The Mayavadi philosopher's concept of becoming one with the Supreme Lord is another symptom of being lost in false ego. That's the oneness of losing one's identity. One may falsely claim that he's the Supreme Lord, but actually he is not. Does anyone in this room think they are the Supreme Personality of Godhead? No, I didn't think so. Huh? Not today. Well, this is the last snare of Maya's influence, the last trap of Maya upon the living entity, to think oneself equal with the Supreme Lord or to think oneself to be the Supreme Lord himself is due to false ego. False ego. I'll even know that I'm an eternal soul, but I won't surrender. I'll even know I'm spirit, but I won't surrender to the Supreme Lord. And the final verse we'll read today, the realization of the actual identity. When by mature understanding, immature understanding of who we are is to understand that we're soul. Immature means incomplete. Mature understanding means to understand that we're souls that are eternally Krishna's servants. When by mature understanding one can realize his individuality, then the situation he accepts under false ego becomes manifest to him. He sees things as they are. He regains his actual identity. We'll read from the purport. The Mayavadi philosopher's position is that in the ultimate issue, the individuality is lost. Everything becomes one. The Mayavadis are like the people, they're preaching to the people who are asleep and dreaming that I'm dreaming I'm Napoleon, I'm dreaming I'm Genghis Khan, I'm dreaming Julius Caesar, something. And the Mayavadi said, you're just dreaming these things. These are not you. Are they correct that it is not you? Most certainly. But when they complete their statement, when you remove your false sense of dreaming that you are Julius Caesar and the word Caesar, you know, the word, they took that word and made czar. How do you say that in Russian, the word czar? Is it same? Czar came from the word Caesar, the king of Russia. They were called czars, came from the word Caesar. You are Peter the Great, or something like that, dreaming that you are not. Get rid of that illusion. And then you will see, get rid of the false identity, and you will see that you are nothing. That you don't exist as an individual anymore. So then, instead of going from dreaming sleep, they want to take you into deep sleep. And the devotees say, no, no, wake up completely. Jeev Krishna das Visras Kala, no, Karol Dukonai, no more misery. When you realize actually that you are Krishna das, and not only Krishna das, but the servant, dasano, 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 das, the servant and the servant of Krishna's servants. The Mayavadi philosopher's position is that in the ultimate issue, the individual lost, everything becomes one. And there is no distinction between the knower, he who knows that which is known and what is knowledge. But by minute analysis, we can see this is not correct. Individuality is never lost, even when one thinks that the three different principles, namely the knower, the knowledge, and knowable and knowledge, see, these are the topics of jnana, are amalgamated or merged into one. The very concept that the three merge into one is enough. Listen to this logic. The very concept that the three merge into one, knowledge, the knower, and that which is known, the knowable, is a form of knowledge. You have to know that. And since the perceiver of the knowledge still exists, because I'm the one who has that knowledge, how one can say that the knower, knowledge, and knowable have become one? Because the knowledge is there. When you have the knowledge, you have that knowledge. So if you say, I have that knowledge, then you exist. I exist. If I say, I have that knowledge now, I know that knowledge, the knowable, and what's the third one? The knower are all one. I have that knowledge, so I have it. So if I have it, that means I exist. Because how could I have it and not exist simultaneously? That's the logic Prabhupada has. The individual soul who is perceiving this knowledge still remains an individual. And if he doesn't remain an individual, then how could he say, I have this knowledge? Well, how could he talk about it or write a book about it or accept Mayavadi disciples and become a Mayavadi guru? Both in material existence and in spiritual existence, the individuality continues. The only difference is the quality of the identity. In the material identity, the false ego acts, and because of false identification, one takes things to be different from what they actually are. So that when one's consciousness is clear, the citta is clear, then one sees things as they are. When it's contaminated by ignorance, and in that text 21, the contamination was like earth, like water before it comes in contact, clear water like before it comes in contact with earth. It's so clear. That is the pure consciousness. That is the basic principle of conditional life. Similarly, when the false ego is purified, one takes everything in the right perspective. False ego is purified means removed. Ignorance is removed and real ego is there. Then one sees things in the right perspective. That is the stage of liberation. So, what we've heard about is how to remove. Remember, creation, the soul has been injected within this creation and covered over 1,000 times by misidentifications. And here we've heard about a soul who's within that mahatattva, even within a body, and he doesn't at all think himself part of that. And this has been going on for billions of births. So tomorrow we're going to hear Devahuti's question. Is this really possible to remove the soul from this? And she's going to ask a corollary question, which Prabhupada says is Buddhistic. She says, does anything exist when all the material qualities are removed? So it's like saying, if I remove my hands and my arms and every bit of gross matter who identify as me, this is who I perceive as me, if I remove that, is there anything left of me? Well, there's the internal organs, so I remove that as well. And then if I remove all my material desires and all my material tendencies and all my material thoughts, is there anything going to be left at all? Right. But I can understand why she's asking that question, because it feels like that sometimes. Because it feels like that's all of me that I know. That's all of me that seems to exist. It seems like, it feels like that sometimes. So her question is quite interesting. And Prabhupada says it's Buddhistic. But that's what it feels like sometimes. If you take all the material parts of me and all my material, is there anything left? Who is me in the midst of that? That's actually what we want to find out. And Kapila Devahuti will ask that question. And if Krishna allows, tomorrow we shall answer it. 17 to 30. And that will finish this chapter. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Like it says that during deep sleep, all the functions of the consciousness withdraw into the heart. In other words, one gets relief from the miseries of the body, the miseries of the mind, the miseries of other people. So let us all take rest now. But no one dream, only deep sleep. Because you're Swiss, you're a Jungian psychologist naturally. Well, it's a way that which is on the unconscious manifests through to the consciousness of a conditioned soul. But also, there are dreams in the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, so we can also say it's a reflection. There's one prayer that Krishna Chakravarti Thakur wrote called Swapna Bilas, the enjoyment of dreams. Very sweet, very Raise your hand if you've read that. Very nice, isn't it? Very sweet. You've read it? Maybe I'll read that. We'll hear about that kind of dream tomorrow, if we can. I'll see if this will be time. It's a dream that Srimati Radharani had. Any other questions or comments? Does that mean we will actually... No, it doesn't quite mean it yet. Yes. Lord Kapila is speaking this to Devahuti, and Sukadev Goswami is speaking to one layer out to Maharaj Prickett, and Suta Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Prickett, excuse me, to the sages of Namasharanya. And also, very much an explanation of Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, which the Bhagavatam explains how nothing is separate from Krishna. This is Sambandhagyan. Nothing is separate from Krishna. And to see anything as separate from him is illusion. The soul who... Yes. Blessed with a good memory. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kapila Muni ki jai, Sankhya Yoga ki jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Pandit ki jai.